what you were just talking about now. You were saying when you did your piece of militancy, Mrs. Morrison didn't really like the idea. That was your hostess.
Oh, no. She thought it was a crazy idea. And she said, you're known. You were on the platform at Caxton Hall. And you're known in other things, you see. And she said, it's absolutely hopeless. Have you ever been to the Tower?
Yes.
No, says I.
Yes,
well, she says, you can't get in. They take your bag from you, they take you this, that and the other. Well, forewarned was forearmed with me. See, I didn't take a bag. I had made a pocket to tie round my waist under my coat. And what is more, she said, and if you want, what are you going to do for a missile? So I said, I don't know, I shall think about it, if something will come to me. And then I remembered seeing the housekeeper doing the grate one early morning, and I said, and those bars she lifted out, one of those would do. Well, they were too heavy. But we had sent out and we got a file and we made one bar into two. I made a parcel of those, each one, writing on white paper, this is my protest to the government for its treachery to the working women of Great Britain. And this was the result of the Dickinson Amendment that was going before the House, and a deputation that had been held, of which I was a member for Leeds, to Lloyd George and Sir Edward Grey. And the Lloyd George's reply was, he was complimented Mrs. Drummond for the organization of the deputation. He said, I only wish I could place this on the bar of the, at the bar of the House. Well, of course, we were delighted. We went away. And they refused us a procession when we came up from London to London. Mm-hmm. And this then, we were then going to have this great Caxton Hall meeting to rejoice to what we call a half loaf measure rather than a full measure, namely, that the Dickinson Amendment was that the vote would be given to women over 30 with a property qualification only.
Yes.
See. So, of course, the Speaker ruled it out of order as soon as it came up. And Mrs. Pankhurst said, and that meeting, it was packed, and so was the platform. Patrick Robinson's were there, and all the notables.
Yes.
And she said, we have been tricked again.
Yes.
I now hold a council of war. And then she collected the volunteers from the platform that was going to help her. And my help then didn't coincide with my thoughts, and I didn't go on that Bond Street expedition, but I did the Tower instead. But that was all an aftermath. I hadn't thought of anything up to then.
It was all your idea, was it really? You wanted to do something on your own?
No, I never thought of, I didn't know what I was going to do. And Mrs. Morrison said to me, when are you going back to Leeds? I said, I won't go back till I've done something. I don't know what I'll do. I'm going to sit in the park and get some ideas or inspiration of what So that's what I did. I bought a guide to London, went and sat in Kensington Park, and because we were on Addison Mansions, and went and sat there. And I got down to the teens before I could make up my mind what to do.
Then you thought of the tower.
The tower, that's the thing. Everybody knows the tower, says me. To myself. I think that's good, but then of course in my ignorance I had no idea about it being so protected.
So Mrs. Morrison tried to discourage you really from the idea?
Oh yes. Mm. Yes. Mm. Oh, she thought she was responsible for me. Mm.
So then you told me last time you went on the underground twice, didn't you, before you could get off. And then you did your...
The misery.
Yes.
Then I suddenly remembered it was Saturday morning and it might be closing at noon. That electrified me.
So you got off.
Yes.
But you were saying just now, afterwards, you were rather frightened at what Mrs. Pankhurst would think, weren't you? I hadn't realised that.
Well, I didn't want to disobey our leader, because I was so loyal to Mrs. Pankhurst. But I had no way of doing anything. I simply had to act.
So you went to the meeting at the pavilion afterwards, wondering what
she'd say. That was on the Monday.
Yes. You were worried about...
I didn't know that she was going to take the chair. I didn't know anything. The meeting was organised as per usual for that Monday's afternoon meetings that they were having at that time. Mm. And of course this one was so recent, you see. It was all propaganda during the truce. And I'd no idea what I'd just had to go to the meeting.
Mm. And you were worried what she would say, were you, or what she would think?
Well, I was apprehensive, you see.
Because you'd acted without instructions?
Yes. Mm.
Anyway, it was all right, wasn't it?
Oh, Father, what she said in introducing me to speak. Well, Dr. Ethelmithus spoke first. And they howled her down. They wanted to hear me, because I was a prisoner. You see, I was out on bail. And the complication was that all this rowdyism, you see, and when Mrs. Pankhurst stood up, she got them quiet and said, if they wanted to know, well, you know, then she gave whoever it was a chance, you see, that sort of thing. And in her remarks, this put me at my ease, because she mentioned what had happened about the Dickens and the bill and all the rest of it. And then she said that the protests and the militancy that had broken out, you see, was all due to the government and Lloyd George, etc. Trickery. And then she said that what could be done by one woman, and that I had the courage to go. And it wasn't courage, I may tell you. That she put it that way, that one woman's protest could do more to ring a message throughout the world, which it did.
Mm. So did you speak next to Mrs. Cohen then, at the meeting?
Yeah, I had to say then what I felt.
Yes.
See, about all the propaganda that had been done, the 100 years and more processions and all the rest of it, that was what I did. Mm. And that militancy and the arrest of Annie Kenney and Christabel had with no intention of militancy, mm. but it was thrust upon them. Mm.
So were you well received at the meeting, and did they make a lot of fuss of you?
No. I got a good hearing.
Did you?
Yes. Mm. I didn't speak for long.
No. Because you weren't really a speaker, were you? You didn't speak a lot in the movement. You preferred to act, didn't you?
Well, I'd from after being, that's another story, I mustn't go. My first meeting after my Holloway sentence, Dr. Eleanor Sproul was going to take the chair, and it happened to be somewhere near Barnsley, the mining area near Leeds. And they asked me to speak. I said, I've never spoken, I've never opened my mouth in that time. And would I speak? And of course I said, no, I can't. So Mary Phillips said, you make notes, and told me what to do and all that sort. And Dr. Eleanor Sproul was the chairman. And when we got to this meeting, it was at a big schoolroom, and it happened that it was a miners' strike was on. The room was crammed, the windows were open, and the men were all outside. So, what terror I'd had before, it was double when I saw all this. And so when we got on the platform, I never knew how I got on it, and I said, will you ask Mary Phillips to be the first speaker? Because he was an organizer and was a good speaker. And so she agreed. And I said, and I made notes on cards, as he told me to do, or the paper, or whatever it was. But by the time I had to speak, my papers were all so screwed up, I couldn't see what was on. With nerves, I didn't know anything that had been chewed on them. And I said, Mary Phillips, the miners began to sing ding dong, ding dong. The chairman asked for order. The miners shouted, they shut up and give t'other a chance. That's Yorkshire. So the chairman said to me, it's no use, you can't hold it any longer. Carry on. Don't mind. Oh, chin me up. So then I started. Well, honestly, I told them and how nervous I was. And you could have, there was quiet as a mouse. The list, because of course it was an innovation in those days, a woman going to prison. However, they listened to me. I told them what it was like in Holloway and how I didn't like it and so on. I just told them what I thought came into my mind on memory. And I told them about going in the jail van and what it was like. And so they listened. And that was all. But when it was over, then my trouble began. So when we were going back to the station, Dot, Mary Phillips said, and that, all the fuss I'd made, it was disgusting, and that was no good in a woman's movement. Dr. Sproul said, agreed, and said, oh, now, you should always then try and do what you can, but never make any fuss of it. Like people that play the piano say, I'm sorry I can't oblige, I haven't got my music with me. And so she said, so Dr. Sproul said, try again. She said, you tackled it like an old warrior. That was what she said.
So that was your first public speech,
yes.
Was it? Yes.
And I hoped it would be the last.
Who was the name of the chairman? Dr. Sproul?
Yeah. Helena Sproul. Dr. Helena
Sproul. How do you spell that? S-P-R-O-W?
L-E.
Sproul.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
She was a medical doctor, was she?
I think so. I never saw her again.
Mm. So did you speak again, Mrs. Cohen, after that?
No, when I was dragged into things. Then it was the propaganda. Oh, yes, I got locked up again for that.
Well, you broke a window, didn't you, later?
Yes, no, that was that was for Asquith's meeting in Leeds at the Coliseum.
Yes, yes. Can you remember what you told the miners about being in prison at that Barnsley meeting? I mean, you never talked to me about what it was like in prison the first time. What did you tell them? What did you say?
Well, I told them about how many were arrested. You see, they're from the Caxton Hall. I told them that time. And then I told them, I think there was about over 200. On the raid on the House of Commons, and the big procession.
Yes.
And people like Charles Beresford and all, a lot of the ILP people were in that procession.
Yes.
And when we were taken to Cannon Row Police Station, they hadn't enough papers to for us, to bail us out.
Yes.
And it was 2 o'clock in the morning before Pettit Lawrence bailed us all out to appear at Bow Street. And then we were taken alphabetically. In the meantime, all that weekend, well, the arrangements were being made. We were out on bail. We had to report every morning at Bow Street. They had to open the recreation room of the officers, billiard room, to hold us. They hadn't enough cells.
What was the occasion? This then, your first prison was for the Tower. Your next imprisonment was...
No, that was not the first. That was 1911. That was my first offence.
I see. The one you're talking about now, you mean?
Yes.
And that was just...
First meeting I'd been up to in Caxton Hall.
I see. And you went on the protest to the House of Commons afterwards, did you? And that's when you got arrested.
Yes.
I see. Yes. So you spoke to the miners after that period of prison, did you? Or after the Tower? I see.
7 days.
I see.
Yeah.
So what was it like in prison your first time then, Mrs. Cohen? What happened to you? Last time you explained to me how when you became a magistrate, you're always very sympathetic to the people in the dock because you've been in prison yourself.
Yes.
So what impact did it make on you, your first imprisonment, that is?
Well, God, if one's sensitive, the very slanging of the doors and that gives you an awful feeling, I don't know, cut off from everything, that you are alone in the world. That was my impression.
Yes. Just the atmosphere of the place.
Oh, horrible. Yes. All ye who enter here forever, abandon hope. My word, that appealed to me, that sentence that I'd read so often, you see. I don't know, by some great person.
So you went in for 7 days.
Yes.
And what happened to you during that 7 days? There were lots of other suffragettes in, I suppose.
Yes.
So did you hear them or communicate with them at all?
Well, no, I had a cell to myself. And we registered as vegetarians. Because those that had been in before knew that was the best thing to do. But Mrs. Morrison was a strict vegetarian, and that's how I happened. When I wrote up to London to say I would go, and would they find me a hostess who was vegetarian?
I see,
and
yes.
That's how I got Mrs. Morrison.
She was a sister of Gilbert Murray, wasn't she?
Yes.
Yes.
She was. And her daughter was a Girton girl.
Was she?
Yes.
Anyway, so you had vegetarian food in prison the
yes.
first time.
Oh, it was dreadful.
Was it really? What was wrong with it then?
A potato boiled in its jacket, a hard-boiled egg or roasted, that when you cut it, broke it in two, it was all black around the edges with age. And some march, I suppose, and a breath, and that was all, and so, and a piece of bread.
So you had poor food?
Yes, well, of course, I didn't eat it, I couldn't.
What about what you did? How did you spend your time while you were in the cell then? Did you read, or did you sing to yourself, or
no,
what?
we used to communicate with each other, and the pipes that ran round the wall, you see, and of course the windows were high up, the cell windows, what we could do, and you could stand on these pipes. But what we used to do, there was a for the implements to eat with. It was a sort of tin fork, and another, and a tin knife with what I described as a hem on one side. And what we used to do, at the appointed time, we used to sing, and somebody used to strike up the Women's March, composed by Dr. Ethel Smack. And we used to scrape these knives, what we had, on these iron pipes to make a noise, which we did. And we had, "Are we downhearted?" And then we used to say, "No, no." And that was all the communication we had. Excepting when we came out to go to church. And then we saw the other prisoners in the gallery. The remand ones were in the gallery. I've never seen so much weeping in my life as I did in that gallery. And after that, the exercise around the yard with the wardens, their wardresses, you were not allowed to speak, but you walked two and two. My companion happened to be Lady Constance Lydon.
Where was she?
And we became very friendly. And we couldn't walk arm in arm, we were not allowed. And she used to say, we talked about the diet, you know, and what she longed for and that sort of thing. She was a lovely lady, gentle, and then my heart warmed to her, because I think we both felt alike, and we were the same in, identical in stature. I had, so her sentence, when we, okay, when the, my sentence was up before hers, or my de-jailing, as my husband called it, and that weekend we were to hold a wonderful bazaar that we had worked for and gathered all as much money and the goods as we could. And it fought for the WSBU, and it had to be an Elizabethan fair. Lady Constance said to me, in, well, of course, a whispered conversation, how distressed she was that she would be in prison because she was a stallholder, and she had worked for Wits branch, I can't remember now, south of course, and she was so sorry, but she couldn't be there, but, and she wasn't going then to forfeit the bail, you see, and she said, the one thing, as I was going out, she thought this all over in prison, that I could take her place as a stallholder, and the dress that she'd had made for the Elizabethan period was in her flat at King's Cross. She had a workman's flat for London, and that's where gave me instructions of where I could find people. Well, I never had another minute's peace in my heart, because I didn't like to refuse her, and I thought that I didn't know what to do. And on the last day before I was coming out the next morning, I said, I'll take your stall. Which I did, and the dreadful part was that I knew my husband would be waiting for me, see. And what between tears and what with heartbreaking periods between loyalty to Lady Constance and the WSBU and my husband, I didn't know what to do. But I said that I would do it, and I did it. So what I had to do was, when I was released, instead of getting the train King's Cross, was to send a telegram. And I write this telegram, of course. My mother and my son, of course, they were all shattered at this. But my mother, she was wonderfully loyal. And I remember that my husband said, told me afterwards, that she said, well, I'll go to London and I'll go to that bazaar and help. And so my husband then put in the letter that this is also said, the only thing that stopped her was the walk. It was too far from Leeds to King's Cross. That's his sense of humour, you know. And Reg and the tower, I mustn't mix it with another case. But so I carried out my promise.
And then you went back
the
on
first
Monday,
train.
Yes.
No, I think I went back midnight.
Did you?
I did. Yes. I know I got the first train.
After the bazaar.
To get back, yes.
What sort of woman was Lady Constance Lytton then? She was very gentle, was she?
Oh, lovely. But quite a character. Have you read her Christmas and Christmas?
Yes, yes, I have, yes.
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 She, didn't agree with what she was doing. Torturing herself as well, you see. I didn't agree with that, but I don't know how she did it. It was so, don't know, because she was trying to shorten the sentence, you see, for the release under the cat and mouse.
Yes. What did you talk about when you walked around the exercise yard with her then?
Well, just, have you seen so-and-so? Have you been a...
Yeah, just small talk, really.
Oh, yes, nothing. Nothing. Oh, the diet we did, because she was so pleased I was a vegetarian.
She's a vegetarian as well, was she?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, well, it's in her book.
Is it? Yes, I ought to have noticed that.
Yes.
Yes.
Her vegetarianism was... I've been seeing cruelty to animals or something.
Yes, I see. Yes. It wasn't a sort of dietary thing.
And of course, you see, her suffering was under the name of Jane Wharton.
Yes.
Wharton.
At Liverpool, yes. 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 When you said in chapel, you said you'd never seen so much weeping as in the gallery. What do you mean by that?
Well, there were, you see, the gallery people were those on remand. That their cases had not been dealt with, you see, postponed. Four assizes or whatever it was. And then I suppose it was the organ and the music. And I remember so well the parson saying in what his remarks was not being understood. And I thought, and the hymn singing and that and that. Yeah, oh yes, there was lots of weeping. Well, there's all sorts. I think broken homes and I think a lot of what they called in those days ladies on the pavement.
When you were saying that you communicated with each other on the pipes in the prison cell, this was in Holloway, wasn't it?
Yes.
Did you have sort of a code messages then, or what? How did you communicate?
Well, it was only to know to cheer, a sort of cheering up.
I see. So you cheered up a lot with the noise you made on the pipes.
Yes.
I see. Yes. Yes.
And there was one occasion, you know, when Dr. Ethel Smythe was in prison, and she conducted the prison, the women's march.
With her toothbrush.
Out of the cell window.
Yes. That wasn't while you were in prison though, was it?
No. Well, if it was, I didn't see it.
No, No. What about keeping...
She was a great character, you know.
Was she?
Oh, yes. Mm. The last time I saw... She came to see me in Harrogate. Later. But the last time I saw her, she was in her robes of office, conducting the police band for the unveiling of Mrs. Pankhurst's memorial.